Where else would you rather be than right here, right now?
Hey, UK Bills Mafia. This is Christian Wade of your Buffalo Bills. This is the Red, White, and Buffalo Blues, a UK Bills podcast with your hosts, Matt and Alex. Let's go, Buffalo! Woo!
Hello, and welcome, Bills Mafia, to a new episode of the Red, White, and Buffalo Blues. You've got Alex, you've got Matt, and we're joined by Anthony Mourinho of the Buffalo Rumblings. Anthony, thank you very much for joining us.
Hey guys, it's been way too long since we connected, yes. So I'm glad to be on with you again.
Yeah, we love it. We loved it last time. It was just after the draft, wasn't it? We actually reviewed all the draft picks and all that, and this time we get to do it sort of beforehand.
Absolutely. Well, and it's funny, right? You think of 10, 11 months ago, the last time we connected, just how different things are at this time, and it's just like I said, it is really good to see you guys.
Yeah, you too.
Speaking of things being different, I mean, all of the free agent talk and draft talk is a lot different from last week because what a week it's been for Bills fans, right? The stuff that Bean has done is unbelievable.
My head was spinning the last couple of days because I think like a lot of Bills fans, right, you almost came to peace of like, all right, Matt Milano is going to move on. You can't really afford him. He's going to demand a huge contract. Then you get his news on Thursday, right? And you get this like kind of jolt of adrenaline.
Oh, yeah.
So then you're thinking, all right, there's no way. Well, Darrell Williams is definitely gone. And then you get that signing on. So I don't even know what to do.
Right.
Yeah. I think it's shocking me. Because, I mean, let's say we had a discussion, me and Alex, on the previous episode. Would you keep Milano? Would you keep Williams? I mean, I love Matt Milano. I've loved him since he's been at the Bills and came over from Boston College. I said Williams. I actually said, let Milano go. Make sure Williams is done. So you've got those bookend tackles. You don't have to get a plug and play rookie potentially in straight away. But when they signed both of them, I'm there thinking, I need to pop open a nice celebratory beer or something, anything like that, just to celebrate what he's actually done.
Well, and I was in that same boat, right? I thought if it was me, I was thinking, all right, if you can get Williams for $9 million a year, and if Milano is going to, you know, command somewhere around $13 to $14 million per year, right, you're trying to be reasonable with it. And I agree, right, getting those bookend tackles seemed like a priority, right, for what you are on offense and some of the options that would be there in the draft. So still kind of stunned that they were able to get both.
Other moves looking at, I mean, it's funny because, you know, we all try and put on our Brandon Bean hat and then they do pretty much everything that none of us expected. So it just goes to show A, how fun it is, but also B, how much we don't know about the inner workings of running a football team. Cause we were like, oh, they're going to cut Addison and Butler and, you know, we're not going to be able to do Milano. So this has just been great. But the one thing that did stick that I think everybody was kind of ready for was losing Brown. And I just wonder, like, you know, that stings based off his comments, but like, where does that put us at wide receiver?
Well, it's funny as you bring that up too, because that did sting, right? I think for a lot of people, even before the comments, because I don't know about you guys, right? When John Brown signed with the Bills and that first season he had in 2019, it was that rapport he had with Josh Allen that really helped him take that step. Right. Yeah. And not to say that you were giving too much credit to Brown, but it was, hey, without him and Cole Beasley, and you think back to that 2018 receiving Bills had, right, with Kelvin Benjamin and Andre Holmes and Zay Jones, and just how bad that was. And, you know, right, like you said, that's why we're not the GM, because you have a soft spot for these players. I was always hoping that with John Brown, it's like, yeah. You know, not that you want guys to go through pay cuts, but as you said, we've certainly seen it with Butler, Addison, and Morse. But would that be something, right, to maybe bring him down to $6 million to save $3 to $4 million? Or, you know, do you add a year onto his contract and make it a 2-year, $14 million deal where, again, you can save that same money and play around with things a bit? But You know, for Brown, I hope he ends up with a good team, you know, with a great quarterback that he can be a piece to, you know, continue what he has done, because just a class act in Buffalo.
Yeah.
But like you said, right, that what do you do at wide receiver? I mean, everyone wants to anoint Gabriel Davis, and I love what we saw from him as a rookie. They are two different players, right? So you start to look at that speed element. So it's less for me about what Davis can do, but well, if you lose Brown and if you lose Isaiah McKenzie, then there is some deficiency of speed from that receiving core, and you need to do something to address it. So I do look at someone like Isaiah McKenzie and hope that the Bills can bring him back. I'm not saying that he is the replacement for John Brown, but he can do some John Brown type things, right? I mean, we saw him as a receiver. I know everyone wants to focus on the punt return against Miami, but as a receiver in that game, we saw Isaiah McKenzie have the opportunity to really shine. And I'm a big believer in him and just kind of what he brings to the offense, even on those jet sweeps. So I think if you're going to lose Brown, you really have to bring McKenzie back or someone like that.
Yeah. I think the last few games I was actually tweeting out saying we need more McKenzie, and all the previews I said we need to get McKenzie more involved because he can do all, we can do the jet sweeps. He's an adequate placement. He can perform well in the game. Obviously he's got the punt return capabilities, but in him, you've got someone that can do anything. You can even give him a trick pass. He's obviously played scout team quarterback on there. He's a pretty much almost like a jack of all trades. You could possibly link him maybe to a Chenault type player, minus the more run game on there. But he can still be used in there if needs be.
Yeah, I think he was a real underrated piece of the Buffalo Bills offense this last year, because based on the number of snaps that he would receive, incredibly effective in that time. And you even look at his catch percentage. I don't have it here in front of me. And I realize a lot of it's on those little jet sweep pitch forwards. You know, Allen passes the ball forward 2 feet, right? And McKenzie's there. And he gets it cutting across and makes something happen. But to have someone that reliable on your offense, but someone that defenses would really need to be aware of when he's on the field, whether it's just as, you know, some sort of a diversion or, you know, the actual primary option on that play. I'm a big fan of McKenzie. So,
yeah, I mean, we've got a decent, we've got Diggs and Beasley anyway on there. And obviously Gabe Davis is coming through. I don't think he's heir apparent next year, maybe one more year of rotation, actually get him involved a little bit more than probably in the third year. Then you say he definitely is going to be a number two on there, but it's now a question of where do we go at wide receiver? Do we get a veteran in? Do we get Kenny Steeles in and bring him back, or do we draft another guy early or late, just come in and just be that rotational piece with Davis? I think the situation we're in, we can go many ways, and actually and really keep that depth there and keep this team in intact.
Yeah, it is going to be, I always look at it at this point, right? Anything that they do on offense can just be exciting, because it's not that someone needs to come in, and you guys remember this from the past, right? Even when the Bills had, you know, they signed Duke Williams, and, you know, we all love Duke and what he did in the NFL and the potential he had, but it was like, oh, we need to get this guy that can be that diamond in the rough type, right? You think of the affinity we all have for a Stevie Johnson, like a late round pick that just, you know, you don't necessarily need that with what you have right now. So you mentioned Kenny Stills, which I think is a great name to bring up, because he was on the roster for a few weeks down the stretch last year where the Bills get a chance to see what he can do. I mean, again, he'll hit free agency, but there are going to be talented players out there that might just be signing that 1 year prove it type of deal, because I need to latch on with someone. When you're a wide receiver, right, if you can be a part of a dynamic offense, which the Bills have now, it's still kind of crazy to say that. You know, you could see someone saying like, hey, let me latch on with Buffalo. And again, 1 year, see what I can do and maybe set myself up for when the salary cap gets back to normal.
Yeah. And speaking of like a late round guy like Stevie, do we know anything about Isaiah Hodgins and like what he could bring?
You know, I don't. I mean, and it's funny because, you know, there's been a lot of talk around Hodgins, right, since John Brown was cut. And it seemed like he had a very impressive practice early in training camp last year, right, that kind of got things abuzz. And then there was the injuries, and he was pretty much done at that point. So, you know, there's a lot of question with it. I think it's probably someone that when you look at Hodgins, he'll be fighting for a roster spot with guys like Duke Williams, Jake Kumerow, right, signed to a futures contract with the Bills. And, you know, we saw him, you know, flash with that touchdown reception, I think against the 49ers before he got plucked after going back down to the practice squad. And not even just, I'm not expecting the Bills to draft a wide receiver early in the 2021 draft, but maybe they, you know, they've got 2 5th round picks. Maybe they get someone with a little bit more upside than someone like Hodgins or, you know, a Duke Williams or a Kumerow. So it's going to be interesting to see, because you're talking about maybe 5 or 6 spots on the roster, and not just McKenzie is being a free agent, but Andre Roberts too, who really just a kick and punt returner. But you know, I mean, special teams is where it's at. So for him, not really much as a receiver.
Yeah.
If you get someone like that in the draft on there, especially in with those two, one of those 2 5th round picks, you've essentially saved more money on the cap or towards the cap, because you're not going to be re-signing potentially McKenzie and Roberts, and getting someone on a cheap rookie deal there, because you can do the same job and they develop him into that potential wide receiver number 4, potentially up challenging later on in their rookie years.
Well, and speaking of special teams, Matt, I just noticed like 2 minutes ago, you're wearing a Reed Ferguson jersey. I don't think I've ever seen.
No.
Oh, 99. I thought it was 69. I was gosh. I was like, I've never seen that before. And I think you've had Reed on the show before, haven't you?
Yeah,
Matt definitely needs to get a Reed Ferguson jersey for sure.
This is one of my old ones, it's a Marcel Darius one.
Awesome.
Yeah. From the time I met him in London. So I've had it since then. And he's even signed the hat.
That's fantastic. Well.
Yeah. That's my claim to fame.
Looking back at Bean's big week, I don't want to forget anything, but there's just been so much. Looking at the Butler and Addison pay cuts, I think we're around 4.9 available in the cap right now, I think SportTrack says. Is there anything else Bean could do to the cap to give us more room for free agents?
Well, and again, I don't think I've seen it yet, right? I don't think they've even announced what the cuts have been for Butler and Addison. So I'm really curious to see what those look like. We know that Morris freed up $3 million in space for 2021. So that's fantastic. And maybe those two guys, if it's somewhere in that neighborhood, you could be looking at an additional $6 million on the cap. Guys that stand out to me, Lee Smith, right? Lee Smith was on with, I think it was a Tim Graham and Friends podcast, and he was talking about retirement as a possibility, right? And really saying, like, if I'm not all in, I am not going to do this. Now, nothing has been decided yet. He hasn't announced a retirement. The team hasn't announced a cut. I mean, he is $2.25 million. I love what Lee Smith brings to the team as a blocking tight end, but you have to think, can you get some of that production maybe from a Reggie Gilliam or again, right, an undrafted free agent at this time? Certainly a leader in the team, but from that production standpoint, is he delivering there? So that could be a savings of $2.25 million. You know, another guy that comes up is Tyler Matakavich. And $3.7 million cap hit for a core special teamer. That gets a little bit tough, right? As you're talking about the potential to re-sign a John Feliciano or dollars that you need to add an edge rusher if you want to go after a Carl Lawson, whoever might be out there, right? Like, that's a lot to pay. And again, I don't diminish special teams. It's an important part of the game. And you know, when your special teams are horrible, it really stands out like a sore thumb. So there is certainly a value that he brings to the team, but a $3.7 million cap hit in a year when you're a little bit cash strapped, I'm trying to pull it up real quick to see what the exact number is. So, I mean, his dead cap would only be $350,000. Mm-hmm. So, you know, could that be a restructure? Could that be something where, you know, here's a guy that, you know, gets cut or takes a cut. The other two is someone like AJ Klein, you know, the re-signing of Milano. Yeah. He has a higher dead cap number, so making him an outright release only saves you about $2.4 million, $4 million of dead cap. I like AJ Klein. I mean, I like the AJ Klein that we saw after he had a little bit of a resurgence after being lost earlier in the season. But, you know, is someone that can be a backup linebacker, is someone that, you know, on pass rush downs can, you know, I'm effective with 5 sacks last year, but that $6.4 million hit is a little bit much. I'm no cap wizard, but some way that they can move some things around to maybe lower that number a bit, I could see them finding some savings there too.
Yeah. I mean, with the Matakevich one, I've been looking recently and I've seen names pop up on the draft list of Jameen Davis of Kentucky. Barry's a special teams ace. I think he's got like a second or third round grade on him. Can actually groom him behind Milano Edmonds on there. And you've got that special teams capability with him that you're taking that $3 million from Matakevich if you release him, taking Jamin on, and you've got him for 4 years as a special teams guy on a rookie deal. So it's definitely something I'm assuming that Bean and McDermott and the scouts are all going to look at in the third to seventh round of the draft for those guys that could, in effect, make the decision of cutting certain players a little bit more easy if they've got their ready-made replacement or replacements lined up, especially through the draft.
Well, and it is hard, right, with guys that don't give you snaps during, you know, on offense or defense. So that is an Andre Roberts, who we talked about before, who you love as a reliable kick returner and what he brings to the team. But it's just, hey, is there someone that can do both of those things? Tyler Matakevich, right, like he's in the linebacker room, but he is not the linebacker that you want on the field. If someone needs a break or heaven forbid they get injured, you know, you're thinking of a Tyrell Dotson or an Andre Smith probably first in that scenario. And Tywan Jones at running back falls into that as well. Another guy, you know, a core special teamer, you know, but made $1.75 million last year to do that versus someone on a rookie contract that can maybe give some production, you know, as a back or as a defender or whatever it may be, and give you that special teams piece, not where it's just an all or nothing when it comes to special teams. And those three guys really fall into that category.
Yeah. So after the big week that we've had, it all comes down to what's next. And the biggest issue that I kind of had is, we're returning a lot of guys on the D line, but we really wanted to upgrade that because I don't know, the front four getting pressure by themselves wasn't there for me. I just don't see us adding a free agent or spending the 30th pick on a D lineman now because they're all back. I know that, you know, Hughes is 33, Addison's 34. So let me walk that back, probably in the draft, but not free agency. Are we happy with the D-line?
I don't think anyone's necessarily happy with the D-line, right? I think when you talk about that pressure, I mean, it is where it is different than some teams, right? Where you can see, hey, here is the sack artist that is on the line. And, you know, maybe that, you know, those guys that get that $20 plus million type of contract, and then you're really filling with lower pieces. With the Bills, it is more of a group effort. And I say that not in a bad way, right? You see in the way that they rotate their players with the contracts that they give, call it more established players, but not those high-end players, right? So look at last year's strategy. You sign Addison, Butler, and Quentin Jefferson. It's like, okay, you've got these three pieces. If I'm being super critical, right, you kind of went 0-for-3 with those guys. None of them really hit in the way that you would look for them to. Now, as you have two of them take the pay cuts, that's one piece. But I do think there is still an opportunity to add an edge if the money is there. And I say that from Carl Lawson is a fun name, and everyone is talking about him. Like, he's everyone's under the radar free agent candidate. Yeah. If he's everyone's under the radar candidate, then he's not really under the radar. Right. But he's young, he's 25, 26 years old, right? If he's going to get somewhere between $10 and $12 million per year, now you're thinking to yourself, okay, this could be the future pairing. If your main two players are an AJ Epenesa and a Lawson, you can have them for the next at least 3 years together, right? Thinking of Epenesa's rookie contract as guys like Hughes and Addison will eventually age out. You know, five defensive ends on the roster last year. That includes Trent Murphy, who, again, second half of the season was inactive a lot. But also Daryl Johnson, who, you know, gives you a lot on special teams, but he would also be in the rotation at defensive end, right? He was not one of the guys that was just special teams like we were talking about before. So if the Bills are going to sign someone like Lawson, does it become Hughes, the free agent signing, Epenesa, and Addison really is those, you know, four guys that are the core part of that rotation? That's something that, you know, that you could look at. It is an option there, because in essence you are replacing someone like a Trent Murphy, but, you know, or is it an upgrade from a Daryl Johnson that you move forward with? So, you know, when you're talking about five spots, I think there's some room to work there with. And if anything, at least, you know, not to just say, well, they went for JJ Watt, so they're certainly going to go for a big defensive end, because, you know, Watt is, you know, could be a hybrid defensive tackle, defensive end. He could fill a couple of different spots in that sense. But I still think they're going to look to make a move in free agency at defensive end. Just how big of a move it's going to be. It's going to be fun to watch.
Yeah. I mean, obviously with free agency and now the cap space that we've got, as a Spotrac saying it's 4.9. Joe Piscaglia, I think yesterday said it was like 6.7, 6.9 available cap on there. Most people have obviously clambered for that that Jonah Smith, Hunter Henry type playmaking tight end on there. With the limited cap space, is it worthy of like taking someone like a Jared Cook for on a 1 year deal, or draft a Brevin Jordan or Pat Freiermuth? And would the offense be able to repeat the success they had had last year, obviously with now Brown obviously out of the building?
Yeah, it's my opinion is not the most popular when it comes to this, but I think the Bills, when it comes to a veteran standpoint, should just re-sign Tyler Kroft to like a 1 year, $1.5 or $2 million type of contract.
I'll be on board with that. You've got a supporter in me.
Yeah. All right. Listen, usually everyone looks at me like I'm crazy when I say it, because, you know, I get, you know, you talk about a Zach Ertz or a Jonnu Smith, or, you know, guys that, you know, oh, trade for this one, or people throw out Hunter Henry. I'm not ready to give up on Dawson Knox just yet. I say that, and you hear enough people talk, you know, Lee Smith actually in that same podcast was talking about the traits that he has and the athleticism and what he can do. And he just kept saying, like, do not sell this guy short, because the arrow is still pointing up for him. And, you know, now as we get to this point, my philosophy at least is you've got to fix the pass rush, and any resources that you have left, at least from a free agency standpoint, probably go there. And I keep saying too, you know, you have Cole Beasley and you have Stephon Diggs, you have Gabriel Davis. I'm not looking to take targets away from them to give to a $10 million free agent tight end to justify what is taking place there. I'd like to see those guys continue to catch passes. I want to see Zach Moss catch passes. I want to see Dawson Knox catch passes. You know, the lack of patience sometimes from Bills fans, and I talked about it on my podcast, you know, you think of Knox, Ed Oliver, Singletary, Cody Ford, like those four guys from the 2019 draft, all four of them had a little bit of a sophomore slump, right? Mm-hmm. Like they definitely showed great promise as rookies, maybe less with Ford, right? Like him being at guard was more comfortable for him. But you hear members of the media, you hear Bills fans in a way just like, oh, well, we need to upgrade over Knox, or I'm done with Singletary, or even people talking about Oliver in a way of just, it just is like, listen, sometimes in that second year, players will have a dip. Deion Dawkins, Tre'Davious White, Matt Milano, all three of those players had slumps as sophomores. So you've got talented players that know your system, that work hard, that still have not scratched their potential yet. Don't be in such a hurry to move on from them for the new shiny toy when someone like Knox, I look at him and say, if I have limited resources, I'll spend them someplace else. Maybe to get a tight end in the third round, right? You can look at one of those guys to come in, provide some competition, push him a little bit, but not where I'm making a huge investment when you talk about free agency.
Yeah, especially in a year where the cap goes down, patience is important because you have to rely on your guys. Not a lot of contracts are going to be able to get signed out there.
But it's not easy to have patience, right? I mean, you made it to the AFC Championship game last year. You're thinking like,
what's the
peak? Right? You think like the Super Bowl window is now. You know, what is that? What is that next piece? And you know, I guess if I thought it was a tight end, maybe I would be a little bit more on board with that. And you know, I find myself at times like, you know, you think, hey, you know, if you upgraded this weapon, or do you get a bigger, you know, wide receiver type to replace John Brown type of piece? And you just take a step back and have a little bit of patience.
The piece is probably more on the defense, right? So like looking at the roster now and considering free agency, what is the positional needs?
I mean, cornerback too now is the one that stands out after edge rusher. I think is you look at the D line, right? And you want it to be better, but we talked about that before and what that can look like. Cornerback too is the question mark. And we've heard Brandon Bean, he was on with Richard Sherman and Chris Collinsworth, and he touted Dane Jackson, which I think was great. I mean, going back to what I said before, right? Okay. Seventh round pick. I mean, if this guy ends up being, you know, a starting cornerback, what a great find and what takes place there. And we certainly saw him flash as a rookie, right? When he would get called up from the practice squad and forced into playing, that he showed some promise in a similar way to what we felt with Levi Wallace before. I mean, I remember talking about him as an undrafted free agent, as a guy that I was most excited about, started at Alabama, like his story of going from being a walk-on to earning a scholarship to becoming a starter. You know, it's that type of story you can get behind. And I'm still a fan of Levi Wallace. I think if they can re-sign him for the RFA tender at 2.something million, that they should have done that already, because then at least you'd know what your floor is. And if Levi Wallace is your floor at cornerback, you know where you stand. But you can upgrade the position on the defensive side of the ball. That is the one that has the most potential for upgrade. And I would like to see the Bills do it in the draft, because you have a lot of money now invested in Micah Hyde, Jordan Poyer, Tre'Davious White, those three quarters of your defensive backfield. Go get a young guy on a rookie contract and let's see what he can do.
Yeah. So, I mean, with obviously free agency and all that, what would your approach be to that cornerback? If we just said just free agent on there, would you go for a like of Patrick Peterson, AJ Bowie, a bigger name one, or go for someone like I'm just trying to pick out a name out of the hat here, like a Chiobe Awuzie or a Jonathan Joseph, that type of player, the lower down, which are not going to command that much money? Would you be a one to pay a high guy a little bit of money, or someone that you can get for a reasonable amount, they'll make a good production, and then look into the draft to develop that player?
Yeah, I would not look to sign any big name cornerbacks, right? Richard Sherman's name had been thrown out there after you know, he and Bean were on that podcast together and developed a nice rapport. It sounded like almost Collinsworth was making a pitch, and I think that led to that conversation taking place. But you could see it because, right, the Bills adding that veteran cornerback in the room, that philosophy. Well, Tre'Davious White is the veteran in the room now. Like, you don't need a Josh Norman there, like not an EJ Gaines. Like, no disrespect even to those guys either, but it's if you're looking and saying, oh, we need to add a veteran to the room, you already have that veteran in my opinion. So, you know, do they bring back a familiar name? I mean, Kevin Johnson, someone that, you know, the Bills lost in free agency last year, is a free agent again. You know, that's a guy you could probably bring in on a again, a 1 year, $2 million type of contract, I'd be fine with something like that. But as I was saying, I would really like them to get someone in the draft, maybe in that first, second, or third round. I think that's where they can bring in someone that, if paired with Levi Wallace, you provide that competition, but you can get more athletic there and eventually make that switch.
Before we, I wanted to walk back. You mentioned RFAs. So it's Levi Wallace, Corey Bohorquez, and Ike Budker. Around the league, are other RFAs being signed, or is this something that is usually taking a while to do?
You know what? That's a good question. And I haven't seen too much with it lately. And I've been distracted over the last 2 days because the moves that the Bills have been making, but I haven't seen too much with it yet. I mean, everyone, Sal Capaccio was talking about the strategy the Bills had with Isaiah McKenzie last year, right? Like, they did not tender him as a restricted free agent. They let him hit free agency, right? Become unrestricted, and then signed him back to the 1 year deal. So I'm curious if that is going to be their philosophy with those guys. Right. Again, as a fan, you're always a little worried, like, you know, I don't want to see them lose Corey Bohorquez. Like, I want that consistency on special teams. Ike Botker, I mean, did serviceably well as a starting guard last year, you know, to bring him back. But you imagine those conversations are taking place. The one I am torn on is Wallace. And to expand on that a little bit, I have a bit of a soft spot for him, as I talked about before, of just his personal story and getting to Alabama and then getting to the NFL. And it's like, hey, if he hits free agency and gets paid, good for him.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, he's been a good starter in Buffalo. We know that the team can upgrade there, but I'm a fan of Levi Wallace as a person. And if he hits free agency and signs a multi-year deal and, you know, and gets paid. I mean, I know not to say like, hey, getting $2 million, like that's still doing okay. But when you talk about the wealth that can change and set up your family for life, I'd like to see Levi Wallace get what he deserves. Usually when you say someone gets what they deserve, it's in a negative light. I'm trying to say it as positively as I can.
Yeah. No. So before we go on, what we're going to do is we're each going to make a little a pitch on who to pick at 30. I just want to discuss the recent mock you put on just literally today. You actually did a 7-rounder with through the Draft Network with a few trades in there. I just really want to go through that with you and just hear your explanations and just and that's just a bit of discussion on that. You actually traded down in the first round pick with the Bucks.
Great idea.
Well, and go ahead, Matt. I'm sorry.
And to select Creed Humphrey on there. Now that I do like the idea, and I think on our last show, I was a bit of an advocate for trading down because you can pick up the valuable pieces in 3, 4, 5 and all that to add the depth onto it, knowing that we haven't got too many glazing holes on there. But the pick I like with Humphrey, as you've put on there, gives that flexibility on there.
Well, and it's a fine line too, right? And you go to the draft simulator at the draftnetwork.com, and as you guys know, you can just have a lot of fun with it, right? Yeah. Play out different scenarios. If I go with this position at 30, how does that change things? Or, you know, as you flip flop and each week I do a different type of mock draft. And of course, I'm not just going to do a straight mock draft every week. You've got to look at those different scenarios or it gets boring. And people even ask, why do you do mock drafts before free agency? And it's like, guys, it's fun. Like, it's it's something to do. It seems like enough of the fans engage and enjoy it. And I enjoy it. And with this, it was.
Nothing else to talk about.
So, you know, in this scenario, I traded down from pick 30 to 32 with Tampa Bay and, you know, added an additional third round pick for Buffalo. And every time you go through this, it's like I never truly love the options that are there at pick 30 when I go through, but all of a sudden you get to pick 61 or you get to pick 93. And it seems like, oh man, there's 3 or 4 different directions I could go here in each of those scenarios. So it's like, hey, if you can trade down and add a top 100 pick, you know, what can that really look like and what could that do? And you don't want to trade back too far, right? So in this scenario, when and I'm a subscriber, so Tampa Bay pops up with this trade and I'm just like, all right, I'm going to click and accept that. And it seems reasonable enough. So this week I went with Creed Humphrey, the offensive lineman from Oklahoma, which, you know, in weeks past, I was looking more at offensive tackles because I was assuming Darrell Williams was gone. I was certainly looking at linebackers because I thought Matt Milano was gone. And now it really does allow you, and I know best player available seems like an overused term in a lot of circles because it's just, you know, related to what the board looks like. But with those two players coming back, it felt like, yeah, you can do a little bit more of best player available. And yeah, I wanted to do something on the offensive line. You still talk about edge or you talk about cornerback. But Creed Humphrey is someone I keep coming back to a little bit, and not just a, oh, what I would do, but what the Bills might do. And if you need to add someone that is a, you know, kind of brings a little bit of nastiness to the offensive line, can play guard early in his career, but was a high performing center in his time at Oklahoma. You know, Mitch Morris, like, okay, you know, took the pay cut this year, one more year on his contract. We still don't know what's happening with John Feliciano, similar to a position that Eric Wood was in when he was signed by the Bills, right? Eric Wood came in out of Louisville, a first round pick. I think he might've been picked at number 30 as well. And, you know, Wood came in, started at guard for a couple of, you know, a season before taking over for Jeff Hangartner as the starting center. So I like that pick. And, you know, it's not like one of those flashy, sexy picks that you can you can take at 30 if you think of a pass rusher or one of the running backs or even a wide receiver and what that can be. But I consider Humphrey more of a sure thing. And to be able to draft the sure thing at 30 based on the needs that the Bills have, I liked it. I mean, that's a guy I'm, you know, we all talk about our draft crushes each year. That's a guy that could work into that that territory for me.
Yeah, I mean, it's at 61. You've gone with Joe Tyrone Edge from Washington. Now, I have to admit that for him, I've not seen much and looked into him that much on there. But obviously, he's got the height that you're looking for. Obviously, as you put on there, you may need to add just a tiny bit of weight on there. But obviously, let's see what can he do. What stood out on his tape?
Yeah, and Tryon is one of those guys that right during the season I didn't see much of either, and then the NFL season ends and you're scrambling a little bit and you see what different folks are saying, and here's a guy that in different mocks has been late in the first round all the way through again being available at pick 61. You know, you talk about guys that have the tools, and he seems to be one of those guys. Like, there are not a ton of flaws in his game. He's a high effort. He plays with good technique. Everything that you see about him is a positive. One of the pieces that was noted from the guys at the Draft Network is just saying with an upgrade in NFL coaching, you know, here is someone that just has the potential to be even better than he has so far. And when you talk about an edge rusher in round two, that in essence is what you are looking for, right? Because if they had already shown flashes or more of that potential, they're going in the first round, right? I mean, heck, they're going in the first 15 picks in many scenarios. So anyone that you get as an edge rusher at this point is going to be, I'll say, a little bit of a project. But if you bring in someone like Tryon, maybe is that fifth defensive end, again, with Addison looking like obviously now we'll be back, Jerry Hughes, maybe if they sign someone, that can be potentially an upgrade over Daryl Johnson as that fifth spot and giving you a piece for the future, because we're only going to have Jerry Hughes and Mario Addison for so long.
Right. Yeah. I mean, pick 93, this one I've actually started getting to a bit more about. When you think of, obviously, defensive techniques and one technique, obviously everyone's going for that pick of the big belly guys in Tyler Shelvin. But Aleem McNeil of NC State, he was a former running back in high school. All that quite athletic, and obviously he can.
I still I want to see like his high school tape. Like how do you make that shift?
What?
Right? Being running back to a starting defensive run stuffer, for an ACC school. So,
yeah.
And really with this pick, I always tend to kind of flip-flop between McNeil and Sheldon, right? Yeah. Of getting one of those run stuffers, because that is, I think, a critical need. I think McNeil might have a little bit more potential as a pass rusher to grow into that because of the athleticism that you talked about before. But whether it's either of those two guys, and Shelvin was not on the board when I did the mock, making it easy for me to pick McNeil when I put this one together. But it's just, and it's right, it's that recurring theme of, hey, you've got Harrison Phillips in the last year of his deal, Star Lotulelei, he opted out last season. We're all assuming he's going to be back and hoping he will be back, but you know, at this stage in his career, there could be some question marks there Bills to get younger, right? I mean, someone like McNeil or Shelvin, you know, potentially serving as, I guess what I would say, like what we had hoped Harrison Phillips would have been.
Yeah.
And I don't say that as a knock on him because, you know, coming off the injury and playing last year, it's not an easy injury to recover from. I'm curious to see what he looks like this season. But you need someone that can, you know, replace Star Lotulelei because this might be his last season with the Bills.
Yeah. And also, I'm just reading Joe Mourinho's report on him on the Draft Network. He was actually a high school linebacker as well. So he was a high school linebacker and running back. So he's got the athleticism all over the board on that one.
To say the least.
Yeah.
Well, I could see Derrick Henry playing linebacker, you know, so seriously. the only one though. Yeah.
I can just imagine that Henry and either running into Shelvin or McNeil. That would be an interesting battle. I think the earth would shake and a massive earthquake would actually hit if that happened.
Well, let's hope not. Those are dangerous. But
pick 95, you've gone with Trill Williams, cornerback of Syracuse, and they've had some really good defensive back prospects in this draft on there.
Yeah, and for where I live in upstate New York, you know, you see a lot of Syracuse football, a down year for them as a team, but from the cornerback position, you know, a guy like Williams as a third round pick, as we talked about before, it's hedging that bet a little bit, right? You're not going to have just him and Dane Jackson as your options at cornerback too. So you need to have someone like Levi Wallace back or to sign that veteran type of as we've talked about before, Kevin Johnson and EJ Gaines type to compete there. But as a third round pick, I mean, he stands about 6'2", good athleticism. Yeah. When you talk about a zone defense that the Bills play, again, that can cover up some mistakes that are, you know, for a rookie early on, right? When you've got someone like Mike Hyde behind you to be a little bit of that eraser, puts you in that position. I debated, do I go cornerback earlier in this draft? Like I said to you before, I opted for Creed Humphrey with that. And once I was able to add the additional third round pick, it made it easier for me to say, let me see what would make sense here. So someone like Williams, I mean, here is a guy that, you know, if you can get him in the third round, brings that blend of size and athleticism that is an upgrade from Levi Wallace. I mean, I don't want to talk about a third round rookie, you know, being an instant upgrade from a guy that has performed these last couple of years, but from an athleticism standpoint, Williams would bring that to the table.
Yeah. And then you actually traded up into round four for pick 136, and you went with a running back.
You know, running back has been such a hot topic for Bills fans, right? Because we saw mock drafts early on from Mel Kiper, Todd McShay. There have been plenty of drafts, not just, from those two, that have had the Bills going with a running back at pick 30.
Yeah.
Not Harris has been a popular name. Travis Etienne has been a popular name. And I get it. You know, you can look at things and say, I was talking when we talked before about patience, right? Like of that group of four, because the Bills have Zach Moss, it's easier for me maybe to have a little bit of patience with Devin Singletary, but I think Moss might be, you know, a peg above him on the depth chart right now. So rather than spending an early pick on running back and, you know, looking for that upgrade and that electric piece, it's a little bit of, okay, take a mid-round pick here, bring in someone like Sermon, 6'1", 215 pounds, like a bigger back. I mean, not to, everyone wants to talk about the Derrick Henry model. Like, I'm not saying that he's that type of size, but a bigger back than what the Bills have, bring some explosiveness, but was in a timeshare at Ohio State. And, you know, is he that early down upgrade to Devin Singletary? Like, does Devin Singletary become a third down back for the Bills? We've seen him be good in pass protection. I still like him as a receiver out of the backfield. Does Moss become, you know, maybe that primary back for the Bills? And then you have someone like Sermon that is a little bit more of a bruiser, right? Maybe you've got a second and short or third and short, but is a little bit more in that mold of, you know, that bruiser that in a way, I keep saying that term, but I can't think of a better one, like Zach Moss.
Battering ram.
Do you ever listen back to one of your podcasts and you say like the same term so many times and you just, you cringe. It's that will be this when.
That's why I don't listen to my own show. But now you make a good point about those short down yardage, because I kind of don't want Josh doing that anymore, or at least not as often. So
I don't want him to do it at all.
Yeah.
If it is, you know, a run pass option scenario near the goal line and he's running towards the pylon untouched, or, you know, on a play action opportunity. And, you know, I thought he did a better job of sliding this last year, but the less hits he takes, the better. And I know he's effective as a short down back, but I don't need to see it as much as it's taking place. And just because, you know, we talk about running back, I think a lot of times people are like, well, you know, this is a pass happy league. Like, it's not time to be focusing on the run. I'm not even saying focus on the run. I'm just saying run more effectively than maybe you did it, you know, than you did in 2020. It's not saying pass less. It's just, you know, there just seemed to be too many scenarios last year. You know, the Bills would get a 7 or 8 yard completion on first down. Second down, it just seemed like they would get stuffed in every scenario, right? Second and short, and what that would be. So not that adding a bigger back just makes that work, but it just, I'd like to see that be a bit more effective. And Singletary doesn't bring that type of play to the table. But if you had that trio, I think the Bills would be in a good spot. And as we said before, you don't necessarily need to add that veteran in the room. Devin Singletary in year three was, you know, groomed under a guy like Frank Gore. Like, he can be that vet. That's okay.
Yeah. So before I move on to your last pick on there, just a quick question. Would you be on team running back at 30?
I would not complain if the Bills took a running back at 30. It is, and it's certainly, I felt that earlier. It's a lot easier now, again, once you re-sign Williams and Milano. But I wouldn't complain. If they added a Travis Etienne and said, listen, this is going to be a guy that is, you know, electric with the ball in his hands. He's going to catch 50 passes this season. And, you know, CJ Spiller was ahead of his time in Buffalo. You know, you think if you had a CJ Spiller type of player in Buffalo, and I'm not saying Etienne is Spiller, but like when you think of being able to catch those passes out of the backfield on the regular, I'd be curious to see what the offense would look like with that. It would certainly be exciting.
It definitely had the new dimension. So keep teams on their heels that way.
Absolutely.
So with your last pick, pick 174, you've gone Marlon Williams, wide receiver of UCF, bringing in Davis's college teammate.
Yeah, and with this pick, I mean, there was a number of wide receiver options that were there. I thought it was, you know, again, you talk about adding competition at the bottom of the roster. Williams is a guy that, you know, had seen in some spots before. UCF has a great number of prospects coming out of draft. You know, when you look at their team, it's, you know, they've always struggled to get the recognition, right, as a non-power five type of team. But Williams was a guy, you know, he's noted here, 6 foot, 222 pounds, gives you a bit of a bigger wide receiver. I think similar to Gabriel Davis, again, maybe someone that's just a little bit overlooked because you don't come from one of those bigger schools. And I went with Williams as a bigger option. I mean, certainly there's more guys in that Isaiah McKenzie, John Brown sort of size and speed mold when it came to it. But there was just something about Williams that I liked, the opportunity to bring in another big body, again, competing with Duke Williams and Jay Kumro, Isaiah Hodgins, you know, are all relatively bigger receivers. And I don't think it's necessarily that piece that the Bills have hit on yet when you talk about more of that physical type of presence. Davis is a big receiver, right? And again, I mean, Errol's still pointing up, love what we saw from him as a rookie. But to add a, you know, a 222 pound wideout, sure, right? With a fifth round pick, why not? Usually when I get to that point, it's like, let's just have fun with it and who's intriguing here.
Yeah, no, exactly. I'm exactly the same when it comes to the last few rounds on there. So obviously what we're going to do, each one of us has got a player that they want at number, they want to push for at number 30. So what we're going to do, each one of us is going to choose that, choose their player, discuss it. And I'm going to put it on when the episode comes out, I'm going to put it on Twitter as a poll and actually see who actually convinces the listeners the most on there. And let's start with Alex first.
Oh yeah, the guy who doesn't know what he's talking about. Great. I don't see us doing defensive end in the edge rusher in free agency anymore, just because of the money now. A guy who is in the single digits for payment, I can't see him being effective. So I want to go young here. And I did a Pro Football Focus and a Draft Network mock, and the defensive end out of Georgia, Ojulari, was available in both. Reading up on him, he's a guy who can be a project in the same way Epinesa is. So not a lot of pressure on him, an ability to learn the game. And then in a year or two, he's starting with Epinesa. And I think that's where we go for right now.
Okay, Anthony.
So, you know, obviously I talked about Creed Humphrey before, and you know, I'll go off script with that because I think that's a little bit more of just, it's the, you know, a sensible type of pick, as I was saying, is a bit of a sure thing. Alex, I do like the pick of Azeez Ojulari. I think that is that has some interesting upside. And when you're talking at pick 30, what that can really be for the Bills. I pulled up the mock draft machine real quick to take a look at it. And a guy that I'll go with will come as a bit of a surprise, I think, because the Bills have re-signed Matt Milano. So fans might say, well, why would you look at someone like Zaven Collins from Tulsa? Oh, yes. And what I like about Collins is, and it was a conversation I was having with Joe Marino from Locked On Bills, we were talking about it. He said, Collins is really in that mold of think of Lorenzo Alexander. You know, a guy that you can line up at defensive end on a passing down if you need to. You can put him in a number of different linebacker positions based on his athleticism. He brings you some flexibility there. A little bit of that chess piece on defense. And I think when we talk about the Bills defense in 2020 and in some ways how they underperformed, people talk about Shaq Lawson and Jordan Phillips. I'll talk about Lorenzo Alexander, and not just because who he was as a leader. We'd see him line up at defensive tackle in pass rushing situations. For the Bills to add that type of a player to the defense, and I know there's talk about, you know, do you add a big nickel type of, you know, more of a hybrid safety slash linebacker? I'm looking at someone like Collins, more of a defensive end slash linebacker. That piece that you can move around in the Lorenzo Alexander mold, to me, that's really intriguing. not knowing what else you do in free agency and where some things can go with it. If they do want to do some more traditional 4-3 sets, Collins can be that upgrade over an AJ Klein, and who knows what the team ends up doing with him. So for me, that's a little bit of a wild card, that he was a real popular choice from Bills fans. We did a poll with them a few weeks ago when everyone thought Matt Milano was gone. So he was the easy choice that came in. But if he can be in that Lorenzo Alexander mold for Sean McDermott and Leslie Frazier in the Buffalo Bills defense, that's a guy I still have my eye on.
Okay. Me, I've actually...
I've been Matt with picking a safety, probably.
I've been flip-flopping through these when I've actually do it. I've been looking at Vera Tucker, Melon Farmu, Jalen Phillips, and as a wild card out there, Terrence Marshall Jr. Of LSU.
All right, on there. One.
That's what I'm going to do. I'm just giving them what I was actually thinking.
You do research. Okay. All right.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Okay. More than you. Yeah, no, but not my luck. You'll probably win this poll. but no, I've gone with Mela Farmu. I think what I like about him is his size on there. He's best fitted to zone, and we know McDermott loves to run zone more than man coverage. But he has that appeal that he can potentially have the traits to learn man coverage, and a good Swiss Army knife to play slot outside. And it's just his tackling, and we know McDermott loves his tackling, and actually wants guys to have the proper technique tackling. So I would have said 6'2", 212. Yeah, I can never pronounce his first name. It's Ifeanyi Melifanwu for it. But I was looking at Terrence Marshall as my wild card on there, with behind Chase and Jefferson. Game reminds me a little bit of Justin Jefferson. Can play in the slot outside. Great hands and route running, and has that height, weight, speed advantage that can really make a difference.
Well, I think it's interesting when you talk about the wide receivers too, because, you know, is a guy like Marshall still going to be there? Is Bateman going to be gone? Kadarius Toney, like the fun that can come from adding another dynamic playmaker on offense. That's interesting too, but you can't go wrong with adding a cornerback at pick 30. I mean, I think you look at any of those picks and you can see how they can fit in with the Bills. Mm. And the fun piece is, we've said this a number of times already, right? You sign Milano back, you sign Williams back. You can go more of that best player available than feeling, oh gosh, if we don't get an offensive tackle here, like, we're screwed.
Yeah. So
I don't know about your pick, Matt. Honestly, like, I look at the NFL draft, like I look at fantasy drafting, and your guy is not ranked near the 30th pick. I just want to say, in the two sites that I'm looking at, he's a trade down kind of guy. So that's a reach in my book.
I think he hasn't had his pro day yet. Once he has his pro day.
Okay. Yeah. The pro day. Yeah.
So what I'm going to do, and I'm going to put in Olajuwon for Alex. It was Collins for you, Anthony. And, Mela Farmu for me. I'll stick that when the episode goes out on Twitter, see who has the who's made the best argument on there. Before we go, where can people find you and your work, Anthony?
Well, you guys can always check out BuffaloRumblings.com. You can find me on Twitter at Anth Marino, and we certainly have a whole lineup of podcasts that we have each and every week, and we'll have to have you guys on as we wrap up free agency, maybe to see if we got any of these things right. Or if we just were a bunch of jabronis, like, throwing stuff there that made absolutely no sense. So
yeah, sounds good.
That's great. So Anthony, thanks once again for coming back on. We'll try not make it a long time for the next appearance on there. And for Alex and me, Matt, it's go Bills.
Go Bills. Thanks for joining us.
Bills.
Not us. You don't know anything about heart. You don't know anything about work.
No. Huh? That's who we are.
Bills on three. One, two, three.